Hello and welcome to another Trev and Ben podcast.
Another one bites the dustbin, did you say?
Ben. Did I say I said it in a bit of a South African accent. Another one bites the dustbin.
Hello.
Hello.
I'm also here. You all right?
Yeah.
You sound a bit delirious. Is it the heat?
I'm sick of the heat. Sick of it, Ben. I don't want to... I know I go on about this every summer and people will be sick to death, but I'm sick. I cannot wait for a cold day. I don't function well in the heat. I get very tetchy. I'm not normally tetchy about a dog barking. There's a dog that's really doing my head in over the road. But at 1 o'clock last night, it was out barking. So I'd shut the fuck up. It doesn't normally worry me, but that's been getting on my nerves. Everyone's been getting on my nerves, actually. I've been very tetchy.
Oh, no.
I'll tell you one thing that made me very angry. Twice this week. It's made me more angry than it should.
What's happened?
Well, you know I like a quiz show.
Yeah, well, do you? You seem to get increasingly annoyed by stupid contestants.
I am getting increasingly annoyed by stupid contestants. And I've made a mistake this week of finishing work early and just putting the telly on earlier than I normally would and catching a couple of episodes of Tipping Point.
Now, that I didn't realise was a proper quiz. That just looked like one of those sort of 2p games you see at sort of Brighton Pier, where you drop a coin in and maybe win, I don't know, 6 pence back.
But no, you've got to answer questions.
Go on then, what's annoyed you?
Well, it's a very dumbed-down quiz, Tipping Point. You compare Tipping Point to The Chase, there's no comparison. It's like the kindergarten quiz show before The Chase comes on. It's like the quiz show for beginners a lot of the time. I'm not saying every question's really easy, but what's annoyed me this week, and maybe I'm wrong here, Ben, maybe it's just because of something I've been interested in, but I just think everyone should have this knowledge. There's been two questions.
You've got to show me up here. I can see this coming a mile off.
No, because I think you would know this, because I think everyone should know this.
Right. Just for the record, I have never once claimed to be a very intellectual person, okay?
I don't think you need to be for this. I think this is basic, because I'm not saying that every question on Tipping Point I get. There'll be questions about subjects about which I know very little. And maybe I'm just being unfair when it comes to this particular subject because I'm interested in it.
Right, try me.
This to me is basic stuff that you're taught at junior school.
Oh, God, you are really setting me up for a fall here, aren't you?
About the solar system.
Okay.
Right, so there was a question the other day about, what was it, how many planets are there between the Sun and Earth?
2.
Thank you.
Mercury and Venus.
Thank you for coming up with the answer, because I knew that people know this. And she goes, is it one? No, it's not one.
Although it
can't be one. Everyone knows that it's not one.
Was that the answer they settled on, though?
Well, they only get one chance at the question.
And the reason I ask is because I know for a fact that people who've appeared on Eggheads, they're encouraged to dither. They know what the answer is, but the producers say, oh, make it, you know, throw in some Jeopardy, waffle for 30 seconds, pretend you're debating
in your own head.
No,
it's not like that. It's just a straight answer, no messing about. I mean, I think this was on a round where they get a little bit of thinking time, but not a lot.
I did start panicking a bit when you said how many planets, because I thought, well, hang on a minute, there used to be 9, and then Pluto got relegated and became a dwarf planet, so I think there's 8, but then you gave me a much easier question.
All right,
then Then
there was another one the next day, about the solar system, and the question was, what's the 8th planet of our solar system?
Oh my God. Mercury, Venus, Earth, Mars, Jupiter, something. Uranus?
I mean.
Hang on a minute. My very efficient memory. But Pluto.
Oh, I mean, this is like an audio version of Tipping Point.
My very efficient memory.
Very efficient, your memory at the moment. You can't even remember the rhyme.
No, there's a thing for it. What do you call those things?
Is it a mnemonic?
A mnemonic.
Like I've got one for
device.
You. I've got one. This
my
is how
very
I remember
efficient
it.
Memory. Zoe stores 9 planets, but then Pluto's Neptune.
Thank you.
Yes.
I mean, you would have.
I took a minute, but I got there.
So, okay, all right.
Because, I mean, the whole mnemonic, this is why I stuttered, because the whole mnemonic ends in...
Is it mnemonic? Is that the word? Are we setting it up? Because that doesn't sound right to me.
A mnemonic device, I think, is correct.
I'm going to look that up, because we're trying to not sound like idiots.
I think that ship has sailed if you've listened to any of the previous podcasts. But the whole thing hinges on finishing with my very efficient memory holds something, 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 nine planets. But there isn't nine planets, because like I said earlier, Pluto's been relegated. Yeah. So the whole fucking thing is...
Well, it's not that difficult, though, is it? Because you remember the thing, mnemonic, right?
Well, I got to nine planets, and once planets is gone for Pluto, you're left with nine, which is wrong, but it's also N for Neptune.
Exactly, so you know what it is, because, I mean, I always remember it. The one I was taught was maths very easy, makes Johnny sleepy until next playtime. So I'll run through that very quickly in my head. I know I've got to lose playtime, so I know it's N, right? So they were just making it up. They're going, oh, I don't know, is it Jupiter? I said, no! It's not Jupiter. I was so cross about it. Am I being unfair, Ben? These things annoy me so much? I mean, I was furious about it.
Furious is a strong emotion.
Absolutely livid.
Who is that hosted by? Is it Ben Shepherd?
Ben Shepherd.
Is he any good?
He's right. He's not offensive. He's a... You can almost see sometimes he stands there. You can almost see him going, you fucking moron. Sometimes, I mean, so I've seen clips online where some of the answers people give, and you just see him. He's like, Jesus Christ.
I think that's what we're missing, you know. Have you ever seen, by the way, these things called Karen's Diners?
Karen's Diners?
Yeah.
No.
You're au fait with what a Karen is, right?
Yeah, so sort of a... Like a gammon woman.
Yeah. Yes. So basically, there's these things you can go to where it's a normal cafe. They serve you food and drink and all that stuff. But the USP is that the staff are incredibly rude to you.
Oh, no, I have heard about these or have seen little clips of these. Because I think, why would anyone want to go to that?
Well, a lot of the appeal is that, A, it's quite funny. And, B, a lot of people get a good kick out of taking their parents to these things but not telling them.
Right.
That's sort of what the premise is. But I just thought, wouldn't that be great? Because we don't have it. Like, we've had Simon Cowell being, like, the sort of bastard of the sort of talent shows.
Yeah, yeah.
But we've never had the rude quiz show host, have we? Like, someone that goes, oh, come on, you fucking idiot. You must know this.
But, yeah, no, you're right. Like, a primetime quiz show where we don't all have this, oh, you know, well done. Well done, you've played really well. We just go, you've been absolute shit, haven't you? I mean, you've wasted all of our time. I get really annoyed by people on The Chase. You know, you kind of get the different types of competitor, and I really can't stand those that have just turned up for a laugh and like don't even think a question through. They just sort of randomly press the button and just at least look at the question, and because there's often a clue in the question, so at least look at it. And they're just sort of like, I've had a lovely day, but we've wasted all of our time. Go out, leave the room and never return. That's how I would want to present the game show. I'm sort of auditioning now for this game show. So what would be the format of the show? What could we call it for a start? What would be the name of our game show?
Would it need to acknowledge the fact that the host is a bastard?
I don't know. I don't know if the title would need to, would it? Because I think it'd be quite nice, until it goes out, it'd be quite nice if the first contestants that ever come to take part don't know that that's the format.
So, yeah. Oh, make it a surprise for them.
Yeah, so they go, oh, I'm Deirdre, I'm 86, I used to be a teacher, and now I just spend my time looking after my grandchildren and helping out with Meals on Wheels. And I go, well, that's lovely, Doris, or whatever your name was. Let's crack on with some questions. What's the eighth planet? Oh, is it Jupiter, you silly old fucking whore? Piss off. You've wasted my time. Take your Meals on Wheels and shove them up your old ass. Now, that'd be quite good viewing. But I mean, you could only get away with that for the first series.
Yeah, and it would have to probably be post-Watershed as well.
Oh, that's true.
Which is a shame.
Yeah, perhaps I'd have to clean it up a little bit. I'd have to be a bit more intellectual in my insults, so...
Yeah, I've just realised that, of course, we did kind of have this in Anne Robinson, didn't we?
Yeah,
Witch-faced
Yes,
act.
We did. Yes, we
but
did.
But that was clearly an act. I'd like to have a complete...
No, I do think she is just genuinely unpleasant.
I don't think so. I think she's all right, really.
But no, I think you're right. I think perhaps that boat has sailed. We're reinventing the wheel.
Well, she was... She was sort of matronly and stroppy. She wasn't flat out rude, was she?
No, no.
I'd like that. I'd watch that show.
I think we need it. I think we need it. Because it's, you know, I love watching these game shows, but sometimes you just want the host to say, Jesus Christ, man, where's that answer come from? It's just nonsense.
Of course, they're one of your radio heroes and, of course, quiz show host in his own right as well, of course, Chris Tarrant.
Chris Tarrant, yes, yeah.
He was always a big proponent of saying, you know, you think it's easy watching at home, but when you're here under the studio lights, it's yes. all very different. So maybe you should, you know, give him a bit of cut them a bit of slack, these morons.
I suppose it's that thing, it's only easy if you know the answers, right? So I suppose it's that. I admit, I get disproportionately angry about it. But I think in the heat, when I'm more tetchy, my patience is so thin that those things, they just push me over the edge a little bit.
I know what you mean. I often grimace at Bradley Walsh. And I do like the chase, but I do think sometimes he's trying a bit too hard.
A bit too hard to do what?
It's trying a bit too hard to make it more of a comedy show than a panel show or an actual quiz show. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, he's got a nice sort of. It's a bit of banter, isn't it? He likes the bit of banter.
Yeah.
And that it makes him likeable.
Yeah. I mean, I think I have a bit of an issue with pre-Watershed banter. It's just. It's not very good, is it, really?
I mean, he's like, it's all dad jokes.
Yeah, and puns and innuendo and, you know, someone accidentally says knob or something and then he pisses himself for 5 minutes. And, I don't know, it's just, no, I'm being harsh, he's all right.
You know, there's the famous clip where he's losing it over Fanny Schmeller.
Yes, I've seen it 1,000 times.
Well, yeah. The other day there was a contestant who in the cash builder, the first round where they get a minute to answer as many questions as possible. The guy didn't know the answer, and rather than saying pass, he just said Fanny Schmeller. And then Bradley Walsh has to try and get through the rest of the minute without laughing. And that's sort of a bit of a challenge I quite enjoy watching.
I would be quite cross if I was there on the cash builder trying to get as much money in the bank as I could.
Yeah.
And the level of questions was diminished. I got far fewer questions thrown at me because Bradley Walsh is doubled up in two at his own jokes.
Yeah, but if you've said, it was the contestant that said Fanny Schmeller.
No, I get that. So but I still think, well, hang on a minute, Bradley. you're impeding on my time here.
What's your own fault? You've been, what's it, hoisted by your own batard. You're going to say Fanny Schmeller. You know he's not going to go, oh, well, let's move on.
Are you allowed your time back or a few bonus seconds if Bradley Walsh is unable to finish the questions?
I'd imagine they stop if it gets too much and stop the clock, let him settle down and start the minute again.
I mean, how funny can he still find that?
I mean, I still laugh. It's still fairly funny, isn't it? I mean, let's face it, what a name. I mean, surely you'd change your name.
It probably doesn't translate. It's not the most English-sounding name, is it?
No, it's not. It's not an English-sounding name. But, I mean, even so, do you think that maybe our names somewhere else in the world mean something different? Can you imagine, like, someone elsewhere in the world is just having a riot laugh when they look at Ben Harmer? Ben Harmer? And that means something terrible or lurid.
I think I'd quite like it if it meant something.
If you were an answer
on
the chase in like Finland or something.
Yeah.
And the Finnish Bradley Walsh is pissing himself over your name.
Now, Trev, talking of inappropriate names, are you a big fan? I know you're an Arsenal fan, but are you a fan of sort of lower league football?
I like to see it occasionally. I don't follow it very closely.
So you've not got your finger on the pulse of all the latest news from the lower leagues?
Not really, no.
Oh, well, you'll have missed this absolutely brilliant story about Southend United.
Okay, Southend United. I've got a friend who's a big Southend United fan.
Oh, you have?
I have got a friend who's a big Southend United fan. So I haven't spoken to him for a while, but I'm assuming this is going to be a topic of conversation I can use next time I see him.
Well, he'll probably already be aware of this story then if he's a big fan. But basically, Southend United have gone and got themselves a sponsorship deal for one of their stands.
Okay.
And it's an estate agent's. So nothing amiss so far. Good for them. Getting money into the club. Great. Nice,
yeah.
It's the Gilbert and Rose Estate Agents.
Okay.
And they've proudly joined forces to help support the club and advertise the estate agents. It's a win-win. Until things went a little bit awry. And you know we did last week, you had one job.
Yes.
I don't know how nobody noticed this before it was too late. Like, for God's sake, someone, read it first.
Right.
You know how, you know, you've got the four stands.
Yeah.
Fulham have the Riverside stand. But other people go north, south, east, west stand, things like that.
Mm.
So,
I think I know where this is going.
You do, don't you?
Oh, God.
So, Southend United have found themselves with the new sponsors. The Gilbert and Rose West stand.
Oh, I mean, come on, people.
How did no one notice that before it was too late? Oh,
but, I mean, because even if you're fairly young, like, it's not that... Would you be aware? Oh, I'm just trying to think of any reason why you wouldn't be aware of the name Rose West.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, surely to God, there wasn't one. I know Southend United aren't the biggest club in the world, but surely there wasn't just one person who signed off on that. Surely they'd have slid it across the desk to their mate and said, is that right? Gilbert and Rose West stand. Can't see a problem with that yet. How does that happen? Unless they are much more clever than we're giving them credit for, and they're going under the old adage of no PR is bad PR.
I don't think this will do them any favours, though.
Well, you say that. I mean, you and I have been tasked in the past with coming up with a PR stunt.
Yeah.
And without going into details, it worked extremely well, but it did not engross the business in love and affection. It was a deluge of hatred it brought on, but it did the job of getting attention. So I mean, it seems a bit of a strange move for a lower tier football club to want to associate themselves deliberately with
I don't think this is deliberate. I cannot ever think that anyone's going, oh, then that'd be a great PR stunt. Let's name the stand deliberately after one of the UK's most notorious serial killers. I just think that wouldn't be a thing that even the most deranged CEO or ever would make those decisions would think, yeah, no, let's do that. That's brilliant. Because fans ain't going to want that. I can't see the fans sort of embracing that. It's not going to bring more fans in, is it?
No. I mean, apparently they have said they're going to try and... they're not going to, obviously...
Well, just name the fucking East Stand after...
That would be a really easy solution.
Just switch the stands. If the East Stand is sponsored by somebody else, just switch it over. It seems an easy solution to me.
So they're saying that they're going to try and come up with a way of rearranging the words a bit. That'll probably fix it, but still, I mean, we've talked about this before, about, you know, awkward hashtags, like when Susan Boyle released her brand new album and they tried to get a hashtag started for Susan Album Party. Of course, written down reads Sue's Anal Bum Party.
Yes.
And again, who was in charge of proofreading or double checking these things? The Gilbert and Rose West stand. Jesus Christ, how does that... I mean, the thing is, we are talking about Southend United, which is not something we would be doing if this hadn't happened, so it has
worked. Yeah, but
we're
not talking about it in any positive sense, are we? We're not... I don't see that this conversation would help Southend United in any positive way, because all we're doing is you're basically a bunch of fucking dickheads. So we're not helping them. The estate agent, I'm sure, wouldn't be exactly happy with that, because you'd have to clear it with them. If they're paying you money, you go, if you say it was a deliberate idea, you'd have to say to them, look, we've got this great sort of publicity idea that we want to use your name and our West Stand.
You'd have hoped. And the alarm bells would have gone off the other end.
Yeah, and create a conversation about Rose West. And yeah. I'm sure they would have gone, oh, we're not very, no, no.
I'd like to think some of the estate agents, when they got the news, oh yeah, apparently they're gonna name their West Stand after us. I'd like to think someone went, yeah, but I mean, they're gonna be careful how they word that, aren't they?
Yeah, again, no one's asked any questions. There's not been any sort of common sense that has prevailed. When you think about products over the years that have got, that have been named in a certain way, particularly like we were talking about names earlier, people's names that might sound like something else in another country, you know, but there's loads of those products, isn't there, that have got like weird names
yeah.
elsewhere. Like, I'm just trying to find some of them now. Like, there's a tea called urinal.
Did you say a tea called urinal?
Yeah, a tea called urinal. There's a dip. It's called semen dip.
Oh. Is it salty?
It doesn't say. There's another product called Tastes Like Grandma. I mean, I think that's just a bad bit of typing. Surely they mean Tastes Like Grandma's. Surely that would be the thing, wouldn't it? Because you wouldn't want anything that tastes like grandma.
Oh, that's awful.
Not unless you're into that sort of thing.
So, it's a unique fetish, I suppose.
People have their own tastes and desires.
Oh, God.
There's a thing called monkey gland sauce.
Oh, God.
Which is apparently a barbecue sauce.
Monkey gland?
Yeah.
Is it a bad translation or...?
It just says here, it's a common tradition to name hot sauce and barbecue sauce after crazy things.
I have seen some interesting names for hot sauce, but monkey gland is a new one.
Because I don't think, if you saw that on the shelf, would you buy that? You go, oh, that looks nice.
No, I do have a few hot sauces, but...
What was the one you made me have once? That had a weird name, didn't it? That was like Dr. Somebody's hot sauce or... It was a weird thing, wasn't it?
I don't remember which one I made you have.
There's some biscuits in, I guess this is in America, called Finger Marie. I don't think it's an instruction. Pet sweat. I don't even know what that is. It looks like water.
Right.
But it's called pet sweat, and there's a picture of a dog on the label.
So would you do this with your product if you thought it's a PR stunt, or would you think, you know what, I'd rather not have the association?
Well, the thing is, a lot of these products, they're I think these are translations, or they're obviously words mean different things in the countries of origin for these products. So you wouldn't think about it. I mean, there's a thing, again, I think this is obviously from an Asian country, called soup for sluts.
Okay.
But that must mean something else in whatever language it's originally in. You know what I mean? So, because if you were doing that as a company in an English-speaking country, you wouldn't go, well, let's call our product soup for sluts. That's not a product name we're going to... You know, like on The Apprentice or Dragon's Den or whatever, where they come up with a name.
Yeah.
And then normally The Apprentice, they come up with a product name. There was one in the last series of The Apprentice where they were making some... What was it they were making? Baby food. I think it was baby food. And they came up with a product that they called First Time Foodies, okay? Which sounds all right, doesn't it?
Yeah.
But what they did was on their logo, in the word foodies, where the two O's would be, they had two bowls, food bowls.
Right.
So on the label, all you see on your baby food, because your eyes aren't necessarily drawn to the two bowls, you can't really work that out. Your initial thing, all it says is first time dies. And it wasn't until they were doing the pitch that somebody pointed that out to them. And they're like, oh, yeah. I mean, I think someone had noticed it beforehand, but no one in the process when they were coming up with their ideas thought about that. So you can see that this can happen. But I think normal people, because people on The Apprentice aren't normal people. Normal people, we go, we can't have that. It's not going to work.
What was that thing they did on The Apprentice a while ago where there was some dreadful mistake all the way through and no one noticed until it was far too late, and then they just decided to go along with it?
It was the computer game, wasn't it? And it was about the Arctic, but they put it as Arctic.
Oh, God, yes, that was it. They kept referring to it as the Arctic Explorer.
Yes.
Oh, God. And
nobody picked it up in that sub-team. Nobody had noticed it at all.
I think, didn't they try and bullshit their way out of it and just sort of style it out as if we meant to do that, obviously. You know,
I can't remember. I think they had to, I think they might have had to fess up in the end, because, I mean, you can't really get away with that.
No, that's right, the Arctic Explorer. But that just goes to show that for all of their yah-yah and all of that shit that goes with all the fucking nonsense they talk to each other, and they are dumb. Yeah. Dumb as posts. I mean, I might, you know, not have gone to the same expensive schools, and I might not have the millions in the, you know, in the trust fund that they've got lined up, but at least I'd have put my hand up and said, isn't it the Arctic, not Arctic?
I know.
A lorry, you fucking idiots.
Idiots. I've come to the conclusion that the world is generally full of stupid people. I don't think there's much, and I do include myself in this argument, because I think most of us in the human race are pretty thick. Yeah. There are a few people who are very clever, who do good things, but most people are pretty stupid. And the longer I live, the more obvious that seems to me. The more people I encounter on a day-to-day basis, I can only assume that the human race is mostly idiotic.
Well, I think the most successful people in life are basically grifters. They're con men, confidence tricksters. I heard this story once. I can't remember exactly. I think I know what the brand was, but I'm not going to say it in case I get it wrong. There was a famous brand of vodka, which was basically at origin fairly mediocre bullshit vodka.
Right.
Nothing special. And the guy who ran the business thought, oh shit, it's not selling very well. I've put my heart and soul into this business. It's not doing very well. And he came up with the idea overnight to quadruple the price. And it didn't do anything to the flavour, didn't improve it. It was still the same basically bullshit vodka. But because he quadrupled the price, idiots with too much money thought, well, Jesus, look at the price tag on this.
Yeah.
Only the elite can afford this vodka. And he became a multimillionaire overnight, this guy. Because morons just thought, you know, high price means good product.
Yeah.
And he made himself a fucking mint, this guy.
If you get into an area where people have money and you charge an extortionate amount of something that's shit, they will buy it because they think it's all about keeping up with the Joneses, isn't it? It's all that sort of nonsense. It's that sort of, if your neighbour's got a bit of tat that's cost them 40 grand, you've got to have it. So if you're in that world where that sort of money rolls around and it's not a worry to you, then you'll have a bit of shit because your neighbour's got it.
Do you know that's extremely true of trampoline sales?
Well, it doesn't surprise me, because trampolines, they spread like wildfire, don't they, in there?
Yes, they do. And the big reason is because people see their neighbours have a trampoline and they don't want to be outdone. They didn't fucking want a trampoline.
No.
But now that the neighbours have got one, I must have a trampoline.
Yes.
And of course, if you've got little kids, they see the neighbours. And the beauty of a trampoline is the kids, you can literally see them enjoying it because they keep bouncing up over the fence.
Yeah.
So it's perfect. But that is apparently the main reason that trampoline sales sort of exist and are a successful business model. It's literally just envy. It's the finance of envy. It's amazing.
I think the 4x4 phenomena is the same. I think people see a 4x4 as this status symbol. And if a neighbour gets one, they need to get one. And you think, you know, all the areas we visit, you don't need a 4x4. The amount, because all 4x4 drivers are wankers. And you see them, you think, all you're doing is like you want to show the world that you've got money. Or you want to show the world you've got money even if you haven't. So you've probably bought this and you can't afford it. And I just think we've got to clamp down on 4x4s.
Yes, we do. And especially when you see them outside primary schools.
Oh, it's God, yeah.
At 3 o'clock when it's picking up time. Just this, you know, wall-to-wall 4x4s.
When I used to work in the school, when I used to drive to my school, we used to go down this road where there was a private school. And I made the mistake one day of going down at just the wrong time when they were dropping their kids off. I mean, my God, it was like a car park at a top flight football club for the players. It was just all these posh, big cars. But no offence to these parents, but no one really seemed to know how to drive them. And it was just absolute fucking chaos.
And I wonder if this was true, because it's certainly true of the little school that I live near, that not only are they not satisfied with not driving, you know, they must drive one of these enormous, great 4x4 things.
To pick up also, their tiny child.
They're not satisfied unless they can park sort of outside the front door.
Yeah.
No one's willing to, you know, say to little Charlie, you know, son, walk around the corner, you'll find me. They all have to be... If they park on top of each other, if they could, these things.
I know. It's a showing-off parade. It's a parade. It's not a practical use of a vehicle. It's a parade for all these posh parents to sort of say, well, we've got this, you know, we've got a Porsche one, you know. And it's like, I'll just... Mm. Get the bus like normal kids used to.
I used to walk home from primary school and I used to get the bus home from secondary school. It did me no harm.
Yeah, look, we're such a couple of old men, aren't we?
It was 40p.
Before we wrap up this week, Ben, I wanted to share something with you that I think is very important, actually, and I think it's important that we get this message out to as many people as possible.
Cool, that sounds important. What's that, what's going on?
In some ways, this should almost be a separate podcast. It's that important that it should almost be put out on its own. I don't even know why, like, the whole of BBC One should be handed over to this for an evening, because it's that vital to the, almost to the survival of the human race.
Wow, is it the Prime Minister battle? Is it something like that?
It's more important than that, mate.
More important than that.
I mean, that's just like a cheap version of The Apprentice, the Tory nation, isn't it? Two completely useless, stuck-up dicks.
So, gone, I'm on the edge of my seat. What's going on?
Well, you know, things have been a little bit fractious with our relationship with Russia of late.
To say the least, yeah.
And so there's a concern, isn't there, about if it all went to the worst-case scenario, he might... launch a nuclear attack against us, mightn't he?
Yeah, I mean, it's unlikely, but it's possible.
Well, it's possible, and I think that's the word, that's the important word in this scenario, that it's possible. And therefore, we should prepare ourselves as best as possible to defend ourselves. Now, you could say that would be a military matter.
Yes, I mean, if anyone was going to counter a possible Russian nuclear attack, I'd like the army to be doing it, yeah.
Okay, well, it's one option, Ben. One option. Another option is following the wise words of someone who pops up on the podcast fairly regularly, our old mate, Yuri Geller.
Now, you put me in an interesting position here because I once went in pretty hard on Yuri Geller and I think he showed me up. So I then vowed I would never talk shit about Yuri Geller ever again.
Okay, well.
So please don't test that too hard.
Yuri Geller has written an open letter to... Vladimir Putin, but it's a message to us all. Okay.
Right.
I'm going to read you his letter, and I need you to all take this in, because should the 3-minute warning sound, you're going to know what to do as a result of hearing this.
Can you imagine the guard who knocked on Putin's door and said, Vladimir, might need to reconsider here. Yuri Geller's written us a letter.
Yeah. I doubt they'd take this letter to him, but you never know.
He might have seen it.
The title of this letter from Yuri Geller is, "This is a warning to Vladimir Putin."
Right.
There are rumours and reports that you are seriously considering the strategic use of a nuclear strike against your enemies in the West. I've also heard that your prospective targets include UK naval bases, in particular those on the western coast of Scotland. So I'm issuing this statement as a serious warning to you. So, you know, this isn't just a bit of ridiculousness. This
Sorry,
is serious.
Can I just... Did I miss something? When did we appoint Yuri Geller as our military spokesman?
Well, maybe he feels that the governments aren't doing enough to get the message across.
Yes, but I don't like him pretending he's some sort of... authority,
well, just,
and then issuing threats to one of the most dangerous men on the planet.
I think you need to hear the rest of this before you start.
Fine,
I'll hear him out. Because this involves all of us, Ben.
He's not speaking on my behalf. I'm certain he's not speaking on the military's behalf.
He's speaking to us and giving us some practical solutions to a problem that may be presented to us. So just listen to the rest.
I won't interrupt. I'll hear it out.
If you resort to the use of nuclear weapons and decide to target Scotland or any other country in the world, your plans and your missiles will backfire on you. I will use every last But I will use every last molecule of my mind power to prevent you from launching a nuclear attack. And I'm calling on all the wonderful, peace-loving people around the world to join me. Okay, so this is where you've got to listen. This is where, don't laugh, you've got to listen now, because this is very important. And everyone listening to this podcast needs to do this right now, okay?
Sorry, can I ask, has he been backstage with Vladimir Putin's nukes, rubbing them furiously with his thumb to get them ready for the big backfire?
This is more about mind control, Ben. You're so dismissive of this great man.
Yes.
He says, I want everyone who is reading this to take just a few seconds to help me. So this is where we have to get involved, Ben, and anyone listening. Please stop what you're doing right now and take 5 seconds out of your day to visualise a radiant, energetic force field, like a dazzling golden shield in the sky that will deflect and turn back any nuclear warheads that Putin attempts to deploy. And to you, Putin, I say this. As well as harnessing this immense energy of all our combined mind power, there are also forces far, far greater than you can imagine that I'm sure will intervene to prevent you from starting a nuclear war. They are watching and waiting, and they will stop you. Do not contemplate this dire course of action. Please take heed. If you proceed, it is Russia and its people who will suffer the most. Your mission control computers will crash, your navigation systems will fail, and your missiles will malfunction. You have been warned, Yuri Geller.
Right.
So we've ordered to take, did you take the time out to imagine the shield in the sky? Have you done that?
Yeah.
I'm going to give you 5 seconds to do it now.
Okay, I'm picturing it.
5 seconds of silence, and we've all got to imagine this shield in the sky, yeah, like a dazzling golden shield, remember?
And this nuclear weapon is going to bounce off our collective goodwill.
Yeah.
So and then what?
Just but it's going to be deflected, Ben. He's made it very clear. I mean, so 5 seconds, Ben. Here we go. We're all safe now, Ben. We're all safe.
I think it was about 5 seconds. That's an insufferable bit of listening for us.
Well, no, because
do we have any respect for our audience?
Well, we do, because
it's 5 seconds of dead air.
We're allowing them the 5 seconds to visualise the radiant energetic force field that will deflect any nuclear missile sent by the evil Vladimir Putin.
Yeah. So, if now, and I'm not trying to make light of this, but if now nukes are sent and land at their target. I mean, do we get to hold Yuri accountable for, you know, well, oh no, because I know what he'll say. He'll say, well, you didn't wish hard enough.
Well, maybe the conditions weren't right. You know, when like he was on the David Letterman show or whatever it was, and he was given the wrong spoons. I mean, that could be an answer, couldn't it? It was the wrong missiles. But what he's saying is that if we all do this, we're all safe.
Well, you know, it can't hurt to try. I'll be as generous as I can.
And of course, if it doesn't work, we won't know, because we'll all be blown to fucking kingdom come. Well, there we are. That's it for another episode. And I think we've covered some very important issues this week, Ben. I think we've played our part in bringing peace to the world.
And if we all are blown to smithereens in a nuclear blast, then you've only got yourselves to blame, frankly.
Do you think we'd get a mention, like, if you were getting one, let's say, the Nobel Peace Prize, do you think we'd get a mention for being a part of it? Because we're helping to broadcast the solution to these problems.
You might get a name check. I think if he'd listened to it, he wouldn't be so keen on me.
No. Anyway, there we are. Before we go, I've got a couple of recommendations for you this week. First of all, I've been watching the latest episodes of Better Call Saul.
Is this the final series now?
Well, I always get confused, because I thought it might be, I thought that was Stranger Things, and then there's more to come. So I don't know. But I think I've got two more episodes to go, and I think in the next episode, we're kind of getting towards the joining up with Breaking Bad, because I think Jesse Pinkman's just about to make an appearance.
Now, I get quite cross. This is a bit of a side rant, but I get quite cross because I spend a lot of time on YouTube.
Yeah.
And occasionally I'll re-watch some of the my favourite bits from Breaking Bad. And, and quite within its rights, YouTube thinks, oh, well, you like Breaking Bad. Maybe you'll like this clip from Better Call Saul.
Yes.
And I haven't got around to watching it all yet. And often it likes to recommend the most popular clips, which are probably the most spoilerish clips. Now, how long is it sort of fair game for me to say, don't suggest spoilers to me, because I will get around to watching it at some point? I mean, how much time has to pass before it becomes my problem for not having seen something?
Yeah, it's a difficult thing, this, isn't it? Because I think...
Like, if I spoiled Back to the Future for you, then I think... Or even The Sixth Sense. If I spoiled the ending of that film for you, then at this point, if you kicked off and said, Ben, how could you ruin that film for me? I think I'd say, well... Mate, it's been out for bloody years.
Yeah,
now.
I mean, it's about 30 years.
So what's the cut-off point where spoilers are no longer unreasonable?
I would say a year.
Just a year?
I think, because I think we're now in a world where people discuss, you know, it's not like the old days where everyone would discuss the same programmes at work the next day. So people are watching it at different times, but I think after a year, I don't think you can expect to not see a spoiler for something, because that's why I watch these things as soon as I can, because otherwise you're always on edge a little bit. You've got, I've got to avoid, I might open that and there'll be a spoiler, and so you worry about it. So I think after a year, I think that's your time frame.
Okay, I'll go with that. That's fine.
I mean, even some people probably think that's too long, but I think a year would be fair. It gives you the time, particularly if it's like a long series and you've got to catch up on, you know, five seasons of something.
Well, with the amount of recommendations we throw out every week, I mean, a year is probably an accurate sort of backlog of stuff to get through.
So let's...
I'd say that's fair. We've set the standard.
Yeah. How do we enforce that? Can we put up some sort of force field with our minds?
I think we could try that.
If we all kind of think about a sort of a golden shield on the internet.
Yeah, we could. I mean, we could just call it Trev and Ben's law.
It's just a law. We'll make it law. Yeah.
So if anyone says, "Hey, you've spoiled the," I was going to watch that film, and then they say, "Well, it's over 12 months old." Then they say, "What are you talking about?" And they go, "Trev and Ben's law."
Yeah.
And there you go. If it's over 12 months old, Trev and Ben's law kicks in. It's, you know, it's your own damn fault for not having seen it. Trev and Ben's law.
I think it's good, because I think it's really frustrating when you've seen something and you really want to talk about it and you're waiting for someone else to watch it so you can talk about it. That's a really frustrating thing. Like, I'm not going to give any spoilers, but I'm just going to say the last Bond film was phenomenal. The best Bond film I've ever seen. And it got to the ending, and I knew one person, because they'd been waiting for me to watch it so they could talk to me about it. And then there's that thing where if anyone mentions James Bond, if I'm out and James Bond happens to come up in conversation, it doesn't happen very often.
But, I was going to say.
But should it, like, I'd want to go, oh, did you see, like, the last one? And if they go, oh, no, I haven't watched it, you go, oh. And then you just want to talk about it. But after a year, I can say, well, this happens. Your fault. Trevor Ben's law. Tough shit. Move on. I got really annoyed when one of the Bond films was ruined for me when someone put the ending on Facebook. But the film was still fucking in the cinema.
Oh, that's not odd.
Don't spoil it then.
So what punishment can we dole out for the spoiler people?
Well, is it going
to
be
if you break Trevor Ben's law, there has to be a punishment. Otherwise, what's the point of the law?
Well, I think it's got to be a sort of a multifaceted response. I think you can ruin lots of things for them. Like, you sit them down in a room and go, have you seen this? No, well, this happens. Have you seen Game of Thrones? Well, at the end she dies. Simple as that. You just ruin
everything.
They
might lie, though.
What?
They might lie.
Well, they might lie. All right. I mean, well, that's just one part of the punishment. I mean, another part is, I don't know, maybe we put them in a room with... Well, I mean, I think prison's a bit harsh.
I think the best thing we could do...
Prisons are full enough. I don't think we should be... Anyone who breaks Trevor Ben's law, I think prison... But it depends on how bad the breaks become.
I think I know what it is. Go on. I think I know what the punishment for Trevor Ben's law is.
They have to listen to this bullshit on loop.
No, you get them absolutely hooked on a brand new, excellent series that they haven't seen. And... just as they start the final series, you spoil the ending for them.
Spoil the ending. Yeah.
And it teaches them a valuable lesson as to what they did to you. Yes. And how does it make you feel? And they'll never do it again.
Okay. It's a good response. I feel it should be There should be something that's a bit more substantial. A fine. There has to be a financial aspect to the punishment. They have to, but it all goes to charity. It might only be like a nominal fee, 50 quid fine, but it's just got to hurt them in the pocket a little bit. Because I think, you know, just the thing of having something spot, it might not be much of a deterrent.
I think you should do, I'm not saying don't give to charity, but I think it would hurt more if they had to make a donation to a political party that they really hated.
Yeah, but that's only benefiting the arseholes.
Well, not everyone's equal-minded to you. They might have complete polar opposite opinions to you, politically.
Yeah, but I don't think we don't be giving money to any politicians. They'll just do shit with it.
But that's why it's a deterrent. No, that's why you shouldn't break Trevor and Ben's law.
Yeah, I don't know if that's enough of a deterrent. I'd rather do good with it than give it to the evil, the dark side. Don't give money to the dark side, is what I'm saying. Let's do good with the money if it comes. Let's give it to people who need it, because the fucking government certainly aren't. Anyway.
Your recommendation.
Better Call Saul. The other thing I'm going to recommend is a film. It was on BBC a couple of weeks ago. I think it's still on the iPlayer. Called The Mule. It's a Clint Eastwood film. Stars in it and directs it. And that's what it says on the tin. He turns out to be a drug mule at the age of 90 or whatever he is.
Of course he is. Yeah.
It's a terrific film.
Okay, I'll give it a go.
Do you know, I actually prefer Clint Eastwood in his older years. I grew up watching Clint Eastwood. My dad was a big Clint Eastwood fan, and I grew up watching his films. I was never, you know, Dirty Harry, all those spaghetti westerns. Not really. Didn't really do it for me. But I tell you what, in more recent years, Gran Torino, I don't know if that's a terrific, one of my favourite films, Gran Torino. Have you ever seen that?
At the risk of making a fool of myself, I think I have. Is that the one with Plan B in it? No, I've got that wrong, haven't I?
I think you're thinking of Harry Brown.
I am thinking of Harry Brown.
Which is like the English sort of equivalent of Gran Torino, where it's
that's
an old
Michael
man.
Michael Caine, isn't it?
Yes, which is a brilliant film. I love that film.
I did say, in my defence, I did say at the risk of making a fool of myself, which I then did.
No, but it is effectively a kind of similar thing. It's an old man becoming a bit of a vigilante. It's the same kind of story, isn't it?
Well, God bless you for defending me, but I did just make a complete tit of myself. But yes.
So
yes.
I'll recommend Gran Torino if you've never seen it. Clint Eastwood is amazing in that, and The Mule, it's a very serious subject, but it's quite funny, it's sweet to a degree. I don't know if it's a true story, it might be, but anyway, it's on the iPlayer. I'd suggest watch it. It's not a very long film, Ben. Well worth seeing.
90 minutes?
It's about 90 minutes, yeah, I think, if I remember rightly. So there we are.
Okay, good.
That's it for this week. Thank you very much for listening and downloading. Don't forget you can get in touch with us anytime about anything. We're at Trev and Ben on Twitter, and we'll catch you again next week. Till then, stay safe, stay well, take it easy.
Bye.